Property Tax Division will now come to order. Thank you so much, everyone. I know it's tough to get here on time after the lunch break. But today we have a special guest. Commissioner Bowerly is going to present for us the governor's budget recommendations as they affect the work of this committee. And so thank you so much, Commissioner, for coming. And please introduce yourself to the committee and share us with us the governor's proposals.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Cynthia Bowerly, and I'm the commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. And with me today is Joanna Baer. She's our legislative director. So we would like to share with you the provisions of the governor's budget that relate to this committee's jurisdiction. You have a handout in front of you, a set of slides that we will go through for you today. We'd be remiss if we didn't start out by making sure you all know about the agency's mission, vision, and values. So working together to fund Minnesota's future is our agency's mission. We work with Minnesota taxpayers to meet their obligations under Minnesota's tax laws to then fund the investments across the state of Minnesota that really ensure our economy is thriving as we move forward. Our vision is that everyone reports, pays, and receives the right amount, no more, no less. So that's a very precise work for us, and we focus also on making sure that everyone is accessing the important credits that are available in Minnesota law, whether those are property tax refunds or other credits that they may be eligible for. And we do all of this work guided by our values of integrity, respect, excellence, and accountability. On the next slide, you will see the variety of different tax types that we administer at the Department of Revenue. Of course, property tax being the primary jurisdiction of this committee, but wanted to share with you the vast number of others that we do administer. And we serve a broad base of customers, the 2.9 million individual income tax filers across the state, tax professionals, all of you, military members, seniors, farmers, the over 800,000 Minnesotans who claim property tax refunds each year, the 87 counties and their 800 licensed property tax assessors who administer the property tax system at the local level are also our customers through the department directly and also with the Board of Assessors, which is housed at the Department of Revenue. And over 415,000 businesses file and pay taxes here in Minnesota, and about 160,000 of those remit sales tax to us. As I hope you all know, filing season opened on January 28, 2019, and over a million individual Minnesotans have filed their returns, and over 600,000 refunds have already been sent. And over the summer, we worked hard to make sure that this filing season would be in good order, particularly given the differences between state and federal law this year. Moving on to the governor's budget, Governor Walz's budget focuses on issues that matter to Minnesotans across the state. He has a number of priorities focusing on education, health care, and community prosperity. Turning to education, the governor's priorities around education include increasing the basic formula for state funding to help close the funding gap in K-12 education. The basic formula is the most flexible funding that we provide school districts across the state and puts that control of that money into local hands. Investing $59 million in early childhood education and increasing special education aid to help make sure that we are providing services to students and with the state and federal funding that they receive. And finally, increasing the state grant program to provide financial aid for students pursuing higher education in our colleges and universities. The budget also includes health care priorities, extending low-cost health insurance coverage to farmers, small business owners, and entrepreneurs. One part of this plan is to provide a state-based health insurance tax credit to ensure that employees pay no more than 10% of their income on health care. And then leveraging state purchasing power to lower prescription drug prices, increase transparency, and ensure access to comprehensive drug coverage statewide. And then maintaining the health care access fund by repealing the sunset of the provider tax. Repealing the sunset of the provider tax will maintain essential health services for hundreds of thousands of Minnesotans and provide stable funding for Minnesota's innovative health policy initiatives that promote access to health care through Minnesota Care and medical assistance programs. And finally, the third major priority is community prosperity. These initiatives in the governor's budget will expand access to child care assistance programs, raise the rate for providers, and improve stability for children in that program. and invest in affordable housing across the state through about $170 million to the preservation of existing affordable housing and creating new homes for Minnesotans across the state, and border-to-border broadband to ensure that by 2020, all households and businesses across the state have high-speed internet. That will increase broadband to more than 193 homes and businesses, primarily in rural areas, to gain access to the broadband. Next, we'd like to discuss the governor's tax bill, which, of course, is a component of the budget. The budget provides tax relief and makes important investments in our communities through LGA and CPA, and I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Bears to present the provisions that relate to property taxes committee's jurisdiction.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Bears. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Sure. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joanna Bears. I'm the legislative director for the Minnesota Department of Revenue. The governor's proposal makes several changes for homeowners. First, it allows individuals with ITINs, or individual taxpayer identification number, to qualify for homestead status. Homestead status conveys several benefits to homeowners, including lower tax rates and qualifications for property tax refunds. The intent of the homestead classification is to recognize that homeowners bring value and stability to cities, school districts, and counties. Under current law, it requires taxpayers to have a Social Security number. Changing it to ITINs, this will bring more parity between individuals and Social Security numbers. ITINs and Social Security numbers, more parity. The next is the increase to the minimum deed tax threshold from $500 to $3,000. So that when homes sells with deed transfers, it will qualify for the minimum. Okay. It increases the minimum deed tax threshold from $500 to $3,000 so that when more homes sales with deed transfers will qualify for the minimum tax. So to kind of summarize is that right now it's $500 when a home sells for the deed tax that they'd have to pay $176 on. And so this is increasing that threshold so that if you have a transfer of the property at $3,000, you'd still only pay that minimum deed of $176. And then also the ECRB, this would change the threshold from $1,000 to $3,000 before an electronic certificate of real estate is required to be filed. The next one is the Agricultural Homestead Market Value Credit Clarification. This clarifies calculation on the homestead market value credit for properties that are fractional agricultural homesteads. The change results in prorating the homesteads equally between property owners. The fifth is the Senior Citizens Property Tax Deferral Program. It expands to help more seniors pay their property taxes. The change expands the eligibility to allow participants who own or occupy their home for 5 years to qualify instead of the current requirement to own or occupy it for 15 years. The tax bill also extends the application date to better serve the seniors by moving the deadline from July 1st to November 1st. This will allow more seniors to have access to the program at the point when they realize that they need it. The sixth is the riparian buffer credit. The budget creates a tax credit against property tax to compensate costs of converting land to comply with the riparian buffer requirement and ongoing maintenance of buffers. The buffer or water quality equivalents were required on many public waters and drainage systems in the 2015 legislative session. Landowners can claim an annual property tax credit of $50 per acre for eligible Class 2A land, maintained as the riparian buffer or alternative riparian water quality practice. The credit is first available for taxes payable in 2020, and more than 300,000 acres are estimated to qualify for this credit. This program would be administered in partnership with the Board of Soil and Water Resources, county assessors, and local soil and water conservation districts. And then the money is appropriated to Bowser in fiscal year 2020. And then seven is LGA CPA. This increases the local government aid and county program aid, and they'll be found in Article 5 of the bill. Under historic increase in investments in local government aid and county program by $30 million per year, returning them to the 2002 and 2000 levels. The investment will help local governments pay for the vital needs such as local roads and public safety while helping to keep the property taxes low.
Madam Chair.
Commissioner,
Thank you, Madam Chair. Finally, there on Article 6 of the bill, you will find a provision that is in this committee's jurisdiction related to the state general levy. The governor's bill proposes to reinstate the state general levy beginning with taxes payable in 2020. Restoring this levy inflator allows the state general levy to keep pace with the increased cost of public services and funds for schools, health care programs, infrastructure, and other Minnesota priorities. The proposal would treat the state general levy like other property levies that are paid by homeowners, which do adjust. This does not impact the exclusion amount that was also provided in the 2017 law. So those, Madam Chair and members of the committee, are the provisions that relate to this committee's jurisdiction around property taxes. We'd be happy to answer any questions that you have about these provisions.
Great. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Commissioner, thank you for coming and sharing this. Just going back to the health care cost, when you say the governor's proposal wants to make sure that no more than 10% of income goes towards health care. Is that out-of-pocket costs included, or is that just health care coverage insurance costs?
Thank you, Mrs. Commissioner Bauer. I'll let you answer this one, but because we have so many bills on the agenda, we're going to try and limit the questions to the issues in the governor's budget that are actually before this committee.
Sure. Madam Chair and Representative, it's 10% of one's income.
Great. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Commissioner, and trying to remember, Legislative Director
Bayers.
Akers?
Bayers.
Bayers, thank you. The taxpayer identification number to qualify for homestead status, so there's 1,200 homeowners that will now become eligible for homestead. Who are those 1,200 homeowners, and why don't they have a Social Security number?
Commissioner Bowerly.
Madam Chair and Representative Drazkowski, so individual identification, tax identification numbers are issued by the IRS to individuals who do not have a Social Security number, and they do not have a Social Security number for usually related to immigration status.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner Bowerly, the fractional homestead clarification, are you taking the same position you had last year in the bill then? Is that what you're doing, or are you actually seeing the wisdom of the discussion that we had in this committee last year, and Representative Hertaus has brought a bill to correct it that way this year? Which side are you taking on that? I'm trying to understand it.
Commissioner Bowerly, why don't you at least explain what your position is, whether you can remember the discussion of a year ago or not?
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Drazkowski, we know this is an important issue, and the department has done a lot of work over the interim and working with assessors across the state of Minnesota. As you know, one of the roles of the department is to ensure consistency in our property tax administration across the state, and so it doesn't matter whether your property is in one county versus another that you have different treatment. And so working with assessors, we understand this is an important issue. This proposal is the proposal that you have seen in the past from the department, and we will continue to work with every interested party on getting to a solution so that we can find the right consistency across the state on this topic.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner. So you are against the rural assessors that we had here testifying last year.
Commissioner Bauer. Madam Chair and Representative Drazkowski, that is absolutely not what I said. We are not against rural assessors. We've worked closely with rural assessors all across the state. We did, I think, 3 listening sessions across the state on this issue, and we think these are important issues. So I would ask you not to characterize our position as against assessors, because okay. They are important customers, and we work
Madam
closely
Chair,
with them.
If I could,
Representative Drazkowski.
And Commissioner, let me restate it properly then. Thank you for that correction. You are taking an opposite position on this issue than the rural assessors that were here last year. With that, the riparian buffer credit, so it's going to be an annual property tax credit of $50 per acre. How is this going to be paid for? Can you tell us mechanically how it works?
Commissioner Bowerly.
Madam Chair and Representative Joskowski, so this is a property tax credit that will show up on a homeowner's or landowner's property tax bill. There's an application process that a homeowner just needs to apply once there with the number of acres that they have placed in buffer, and then the local soil and water districts will certify to the county assessors that those are appropriately placed in buffers, and then that amount will be put onto their property tax bill. And then the state, this is a little bit like a provision that you authored a couple of years ago, where the state will reimburse the for that amount to the counties for the amount that's not coming in.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
And if
Representative Joskowski
and Commissioner, so where would thank you for that. So I understand that local mechanics now. Thank you for that. But how? Where will that money come from? Will it come from the Clean Water Fund and from the legacy money that is intended to protect our waters throughout the state for this water protection measure?
Mr. Bowerly.
Madam Chair and Representative Joskowski, this is funded with the general fund.
I take that as a no, Madam Chair. So,
Representative Joskowski.
And I think that's the end of my question. Just one quick comment, Madam Chair and Commissioner. On the state general levy, it's been postured that the inflator that was removed in the 2017 tax bill from the general levy will cost $1 billion over the next 10 years. As a matter of fact, it is saving business owners and property owners throughout Minnesota maybe that same amount, $1 billion. Bringing this back will actually be a cost to the people who pay the bill here in Minnesota, the hardworking taxpayers of Minnesota. It'll be a cost to them. And I wonder if there's a typo there, Madam Commissioner.
Any other questions for Commissioner Bowerly? Representative Hertog.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and welcome, Ms. Bowerly. I will just pick up where Representative Draskowski left off when we had the tax bill was vetoed last year. The issue of the fractional homestead was an important issue. The person representing the department at that time assured us in tax committee that you would continue to work with the counties on this issue. I heard you say that you have been, but apparently you've not been moved by any of these county assessors because your position remains unchanged. And so I can assure you that I've received numerous letters from county assessors from all around the state thanking me for continuing with the fractional homestead credit, and feel it's an important aspect. And just so you're clear and so you understand, what the legislation and what the bill did was provided for a fractional homestead credit based on deeded interest, and it defaults to your method if that's not made available or isn't available. So I think it really was a compromise. I know you're trying to apply a uniform system all across the state, but the law or the bill that I put forward, basically that is the default, is fractional homestead based on deeded interest. And then if that can't be provided for or is undetermined, then it defaults to the way the department wants to do it. So that is the proposal that's been moving forward, and just wanted to clarify that for you.
Hey, Mr. Bowerly, any response? Other questions for Commissioner Bowerly? If not, thank you so much. As you might have seen from the agenda, today is County Program Aid and Local Government Aid Day, and so I'm sure you're going to hear some positive feedback on those provisions in the governor's budget as we move on to the bills that address those. So thank you so much for coming.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee.
And we now have a quorum, and so first we will approve the minutes of March 4th, 2019. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Thank you, Representative Hertas. Moves approval of the minutes. Any discussion? Otherwise, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The minutes of March 4th are approved. And then we're going to go into a discussion of local government aid and county program aid. And we're going to start with Pat Dalton from House Research, who will explain the runs that are in your packets. They're laid out in similar format for all of the bills that we're going to be hearing today. But this is the first time we've had a chance to see these. So she's going to quickly walk us through how they're laid out and how to read through them.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, I'm just going to start with the very first one in your packet, which is the certified 2019 and LGA and estimated 2020 LGA under current law. You will see actually these numbers in all of the printouts that occur that are here for each of the individual bills. This is what would happen if there are no changes. One of the things I want to point out is that we do not provide a list of cities on an either on a county-by-county basis or on an alphabetical basis. We actually group cities based on what are called city clusters. This is one of the few committees where you actually get to talk about statistical analysis on a pretty regular basis. These cities are grouped based on common characteristics. It does use a statistical technique to do it, but it allows you to compare what is happening to types of cities. And so there are, I think, six metropolitan groups and seven non-metro city groups or clusters. And as I said, they're grouped on characteristics like city size, growth rate, amount of tax basis in commercial industrial. So you can get kind of an idea of how a city is doing relative to other cities that are similar to it. What you will always see is you will see changes between on the ones that have a proposal. You will see not only the estimated 2020 under current law, you will see the estimated 2020 under the proposed change. You will also see the change due to that proposed change between 2019 and 2020, and then also between 2020 current law and 2020 under the proposal. And I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Swanson.
Welcome, Mr. Swanson.
Madam Chair and members, also in your packets you will find a county program aid run for House File 1163. Since there is only one bill that deals with county program aid today, I believe it's tucked into the file for House File 1163. It's a table that looks like this. So this this run just shows what county program aid will look like in pay 2020 compared to what it is currently in 2019. And then the run also has numbers on it for what county program aid would look like under House File 1163. Just to show you the format of this, the first three columns just have the baseline for county program aid. So this is 2019 and 2020. The change from 1 year to the next for each county is shown on the outline, and the statewide metro and greater Minnesota totals are shown as well. And then the third column on the run shows the percent change from the baseline year 2019 and the estimated 2020 county program aid. And the rest of the sheet deals specifically with House File 1163. Madam Chair, I don't know if you want me to walk through that now or wait until the bill is moved.
We can do that when we get to the bill. That would be fine. But one thing I think it's interesting to look at on this one is that when you look between the 2019 base and the 2020 base, you can see how with just the exact same amount of money, how the formula will influence how it's distributed between the counties. There's just slight adjustments there because the formula actually works on the changed appropriation number. Thank you very much. Any questions about these documents? Because you're going to see more of them as we go along. Thank you very much. And with that, we're going to go to our first bill of the day, which is a combined request. Representative Marquardt, I think, has just stepped out of the room. Are you, Representative Marquardt, are you prepared to present your bill, House File 1163? This bill address is the only bill that we have before us today that addresses both county program aid and city local government aid. And while Representative Marquardt is getting ready, I can just tell you I'm seeking feedback. I've talked to a number of affected groups, but I am seeking feedback on the idea of in my continuing quest to reduce the number of terms that we use in tax committee that can be confusing, whether or not we might want to think about city local government aid and county local government aid. And that came to mind in part because I had heard that the governor, when he was running, kept talking about increasing local government aid, and counties felt they were left out, and he was surprised that they weren't included in that general term. That's something we're looking for some feedback with. But in front of us now, we have House File 1163. Representative Marker, would you like to move your bill?
I would like to move House File 1163 for possible inclusion into the Property Tax Division report.
Thank you. And please share the bill, and then we'll go to testify. And
Madam Chair, I do have an amendment also.
I'd
like to move the A1 amendment, which basically just clarifies some numbers off of a different base. It's insignificant, but puts the bill in its proper form.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. We always like to have the right numbers. And so all in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The A1 amendment is adopted.
So thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thank you for allowing me to be the leadoff hitter for LGA CPA Day, always an exciting day in the division. From years past, but this bill is unique because typically local government aid bills and county program aid bills are done separately, and the county folks and a number of the city folks kind of came together this year and said, what if we put a bill together in one bill where you actually have the local government aid amounts in there and also the county program aid? So that's what this bill represents. And so what the bill does, it increases local government aid by $30.5 million, taking it from $534 million to $564.5 million a year, which would bring it back to the 2002 payable levels. And then also increases county program aid also by $30.5 million from $234 million to $264.5 million. And so I know we've got a number of testifiers and so forth, so I'll be very quick, but I I've always considered local government aid as the lifeblood for communities around this state. I think many smaller communities, especially out in rural Minnesota, would look very different if it wasn't for local government aid. And not only does it provide funding for important services like police and snow removal, which has been very important this year, fire departments, but it also helps keep property taxes affordable. And local government aid has always been that program that no matter where I live, in Dilworth or Barnesville, the amount that I pay and the quality I get for my law enforcement should be roughly the same as someone anywhere else in this state. It's the level of the playing field when it comes to tax bases. On the county program aid level, the county program aid is not as big of a portion as of property tax levies as local government aid is to cities. But what it does for counties, it really helps mitigate the many mandates that we put on to counties, especially in the areas of health and human services. And so that's where that's very helpful. I'm not going to spend time with this, but I'd like to refer members to this handout in your folders. And it was something that I presented last year, and it has not been updated, but it's basically 2017 numbers. But last year in division, I had presented this report. And it just, you, what I want you to look at is kind of that column where it looks at the local government aid amounts, which is really the second column. You got cities, and then you got the 2017 LGA. And then looking over to what the levy is, the next column of that city, and then going over to two columns over where it says LGA 17 as a proportion of the 17 property tax levy. And you get a percentage there. And as you can see, in many of these communities, local government aid is a huge percent as compared to the property tax levy. And in fact, there's four cities on that list where it's over 100%. And another way to look at that is that if you were to take away local government aid from these cities or they were not receiving it, and you only replaced it with a property tax levy increase, that's the percent you would have to increase your levy by. Now, of course, that wouldn't happen. There would be a combination of cuts and increases. But that gives you an idea of just how much local government aid relieves pressure on property taxes and the ability to afford these important services. So with that, Madam Chair, I know there's a number of testifiers, and if we could go there first, and I'll answer any questions that we
members might have. Mr. Chair, and is the order of the testimonies the same as on the agenda? Then we'll start with Todd Patzer, from a county commissioner from Lac La Pearl. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Loeffler, members. My name is Todd Patzer. I'm a county commissioner from Lac La Pearl County in western Minnesota. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today on this important issue. I want to thank Representative Marquardt, Representative Loeffler, and others from both sides of the aisle for your bipartisan support of this proposal. I also want to thank the League of Minnesota Cities and their members for working alongside the Association of Minnesota Counties and Representative Marquardt to offer this vision for local government investment and property tax relief. I know we've all had discussions together about the important role of local government aid plays for all of the residents we serve. Keeping county levies low is not as simple as not hiring or not building a building or not expanding a particular service. In Minnesota, counties are often referred to as an arm of the state. That is because we are mandated to carry out numerous services on behalf of the state. No matter if the state fully funds, partially funds, or doesn't fund a particular program or a particular mandate, we must still carry out your orders. If the state cuts or reduces funding for mandated services, we must fill that shortfall with property tax dollars. County program aid is a critical resource to help alleviate some of those mandates and keep property taxes reasonable. It has never been a one-for-one replacement, but it is an invisible layer of support that helps us manage what would otherwise be large property tax increases. In the year 2000, county program aid for my county was $742,000, which represented a little over 30% of our levy. In 2017, the low point for county program aid, we received $126,000, which at the time represented roughly 2% of our levy. Add ever-increasing state mandates, opioid and methamphetamine crisis, financial hardships of a greater Minnesota aid community, and you can see how painful losing county program aid can be and has been for a county like mine. The bill in front of you today gets counties back to 2001 levels without adjusting for inflation and will be an important investment in local governments and property tax relief. As AMC Second Vice President, I know how important this aid is to counties across the entire state. In 2017, every one of Minnesota's 87 counties passed a board resolution indicating support and stressing the importance of county program aid as a tool for property tax and mandate relief. You can imagine the power of seeing all 87 counties, from Kitson to Mower, Cook to Rock, Hennepin to Dakota, agreeing that county program aid is a priority and benefits all counties and property taxpayers. I'd like to end by reiterating that county program aid is property tax relief. That isn't in question. During our budget process, we determine the needs to deliver core services. We subtract our county program aid amount right off the top, dollar for dollar, and that's what determines our levy that is then spread across the tax base. In 2018, our levy would have been 7.9%. CPA held it to under 2%. And while CPA probably isn't a term discussed at dinner tables across Minnesota, our county tries to share the importance of this program aid with our taxpayers and residents every chance we get. While this bill is being laid over for inclusion, I would ask that you remember the role you have given counties during the rest remaining legislative session. If true property tax relief is the goal, as it should be, then county program aid has to be a part of that plan. I thank you for your time and for your service to the people of Minnesota. I guess I'll try to answer questions if there was any. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much, Commissioner, for your testimony. And seeing no questions, we'll move on to County Commissioner Jan Callison. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members. My name is Jan Callison. I'm a member of the Hennepin County Board of Commissioners and also a member of the AMC Board of Directors, the Association of Minnesota Counties. And I appreciate the chance to speak with you this afternoon. As you just heard, Minnesota's counties are responsible for the delivery of essential services to Minnesotans, including health and human services, public safety, criminal justice, transportation, and others. Under our state-mandated, county-administered system, we provide many services to your and our constituents on your behalf. Essential state-mandated services like child protection, protecting vulnerable seniors, and mental health care are major cost drivers for counties. For example, Minnesota mandates that counties maintain systems to protect vulnerable children from abuse and neglect. Counties pay for almost half, 45%, of the costs of the system. Minnesota requires counties to maintain community-based systems of mental health treatment. The state mandates that counties pay for the cost of care when people committed to the state for mental health care no longer need to be in a hospital setting. Hennepin's cost for this treatment in 2016 was $25 million. In 2018, it jumped to $30 million. County program aid is a critical way for the state to support all 87 counties as they strive to provide essential quality services. When CPA is inadequate, counties must rely on property taxes, a more regressive form of taxation, to meet state mandates. CPA reduces the tax burden on all Minnesota taxpayers. This is by contrast to local government aid, which is not universally available across Minnesota. In Hennepin County, for example, more than half the cities, encompassing over 500,000 residents, do not receive local government aid. The county's role in administering state-created programs continues to grow. State funding has not. In recent years, it actually has declined in absolute numbers. Total CPA in 2018 was less than it was 16 years earlier, in 2002. $234 million in 2018 compared to $265 million in 2002. In 2018, CPA made up 7% of the total certified county levy across the state. In 2002, it was 16%. In 2018, Hennepin County received $32.2 million in CPA. 16 years earlier, in 2002, it received $22 million more, $54.3 million. Returning to 2002 funding levels is important, even though it does not include the cost of inflation over the last two decades. In sum, CPA is a unique way that the state of Minnesota supports essential programming and reduces the property tax burden throughout the state. I urge your support of H.R. 1163. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Callison. And next we have Matt Hilgert from the Association of Counties. Pardon? I'm told that he's not going to testify today, and we'll go to Lauderdale Mayor Mary Gosch. Welcome to the committee, Mayor.
Thank you. Chair Loeffler and members of the committee, my name is Mary Gosch, and I am the mayor of Lauderdale. I am also on the board of directors of the League of Minnesota Cities, and I'm currently the president of Metro Cities. I also serve on a joint city, county, school district, and township group we informally call the Big Four, comprised of board members of the League of Minnesota Cities, the Association of Minnesota Counties, the Minnesota School Boards Association, and the Minnesota Association of Townships. We meet regularly to discuss issues of mutual concern. One issue we regularly discuss is the state and local partnership and how we as local officials can work with legislators to renew the partnership. I would like to thank Representative Marquardt and the 22 co-authors of House File 1163. This bill represents a significant step toward renewing the partnership with cities and counties. Lauderdale is a city of 2,440 people, and local government aid has been an important source of funding for our city. In 2019, we will receive $540,000 in LGA funding, which in Lauderdale is used primarily for policing. Without local government aid, we would not be able to afford 24-hour policing in our city, and we'd have to move to an 18-hour-a-day model. Under House File 1163, our LGA distribution will receive a modest increase to roughly $550,000. However, that increase will assist our city in providing services to residents. More importantly, this bill represents an affirmation that the state is a reliable partner with local units of government. As you know, over the past 17 years, LGA funding has remained well below its 2002 level. For 2019, LGA is $30.6 million, or is 5.4% below the 2002 level. Over that same time frame, city property tax levies have increased by nearly 123%. These increases are due to many factors, including rising costs of local roads and other city services, but also due to the fact that a significant source of revenue, LGA, has not grown. Although the League's and Metro City's policies do not specifically address the county program aid funding in this bill, I understand that counties have faced the same challenges as cities, and they too have been forced to rely more on the property tax to fund their operations. House File 1163 will increase the LGA appropriation by $30.4 million, beginning with the 2020 distribution. With the increase in this bill, the statewide LGA appropriation will, after 18 years, be restored to the funding level last seen in 2002. This is a priority for the League of Minnesota Cities. Chair Loeffler and members, on behalf of the City of Lauderdale, the League of Minnesota Cities and Metro Cities, I want to thank Representative Marquardt and his 22 co-authors for introducing this bill, and I would urge the committee to include the LGA appropriation increase in the division report. And I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you very much, Mayor Gage. Appreciate that. And I understand that Gary Carlson and Matt Hilgert might want to do a little duet to wrap up on this bill. Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we'll be extremely brief because we know there's another about 10 bills up today. We just wanted to thank you. It's a unique opportunity that both AMC and the League of Minnesota Cities get to do a joint bill like this, and we wanted to thank Chair Marquardt for his efforts to draw attention to this, as well as many people on this committee and the over 20 authors who signed on to this bill. And I'd be happy to stay around if there are questions about the proposal or about counties in general. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and welcome.
Madam Chair, members, I'll be brief. We support the bill. We appreciate all of the co-authors with Representative Marquardt on introducing this, and I'll be available for questions as well.
And I'll just say it's always nice to see intergovernmental cooperation and collaboration. And with that, any closing remarks, Representative Marquardt, or questions from the audience, or from members, rather? Any other testifiers on this bill? And if not, we're ready for your concluding remarks.
Madam Chair, just thank the committee and thank the city and county officials and groups for working together on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. And with that, Representative Marquardt, would you like to renew your motion?
I will renew my motion to lay over House File 1163 as amended for possible inclusion in the division report.
Great. The bill is laid over.
Thank you, members.
And next, we have House File 1434, Representative Vang.
Hello, Madam Chair.
Welcome, Representative Vang. Would you like to move your bill?
Yes, I would like to move my bill, House File 1434, for possible inclusion in the property tax omnibus bill.
And how about the A1 amendment?
Yes, I would like to move the A1 amendment. This amendment is just making a small technical adjustment to the aid.
All in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The A1 amendment is adopted. Thank you, and please review your bill for us.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm pleased to present to you today my bill that will increase the funding for LGA to the 2002 funding level. Since the 1970s, LGA has helped assure that cities across the state can provide adequate levels of important services, such as public safety, parks and recreation, local road maintenance, as well as serving housing and economic development for our citizens. Although LGA is an important program to our cities, over the past several decades, LGA funding has declined. Since 2002, the state has experienced several rounds of budget deficits, and as this legislature and the governor work to resolve those budget shortfalls, cities ultimately shared in the pain and experienced deep funding reductions to LGA. Similar to Representative Marquardt's bill, this bill is a straightforward bill that will increase the appropriation for local government aid by $30.4 million, beginning with the 2020 distribution. And with this increase, the statewide LGA appropriation will be restored to the funding level last seen in 2002. House Research has also prepared a printout with estimates of the impact of the appropriation increase for all cities in the state. With me today is Brooklyn Center Mayor Mike Elliott, City Manager Kurt Bogney, who also serves on the Board of Directors of the League of Minnesota Cities, and Garrett Carlson with the League to testify in support of this bill.
Great. Welcome to the committee, Mayor Elliott. Please introduce yourself for the record, and we look forward to hearing from you.
Yep. My name is Mayor Mike Elliott of Brooklyn Center.
Great. Please continue with your testimony.
All right. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm the Mayor of Brooklyn Center, and I'm here today to thank Representative Vang and to testify in support of HF 1434. Brooklyn Center is a city of 31,000 people, with one of the lowest average incomes and highest concentrations of poverty in the metro area. LGA has been an important source of funding for our city. In 2019, we will receive $1.78 million in LGA funding. In Brooklyn Center, we use LGA to help fund the full range of services provided by our city, from police and fire protection to park and recreation programs for our citizens. For several years, approximately half of our LGA funding has been dedicated to our capital replacement program. This has allowed the city to address years of deferred maintenance on city buildings and equipment. Because of our relatively low commercial and industrial tax base, any levy increases fall on a relatively low-income residential population. Each $171,000 of LGA is equivalent to 1% of our annual property tax levy. However, over the past several decades, LGA funding has languished. Since 2002, the state has experienced two major recessions with severe consequences for the state's budgets. As the legislature and governor balanced deep state budget deficits, cities shared in the pain and experienced deep funding reductions in LGA. For Brooklyn Center, our LGA distribution in 2002 was $2.3 million. After the LGA appropriations were cut in 2003, our distribution immediately dropped by $946,000, nearly 42%. The amount we received fluctuated because after the additional budget cuts associated with the Great Recessions, we received only $114,000 of LGA in 2011, 12, and 13. Recent increases in the appropriations have lifted our distribution again, but we remain well below the LGA amount received by the city in 2002. HF 1434 will increase the appropriation for local government aid by $30.4 million, beginning with the 2020 distribution. With the appropriation increase under this bill, the state LGA appropriation will, after 18 years, be restored to the funding levels last seen in 2002. This is a priority for the League of Minnesota Cities and for my city, the City of Brooklyn Center. Specifically for Brooklyn Center, HF 1434 will increase our LGA distribution by $415,000 to $2,199,416, or an increase of approximately 23%. Although that increase sounds large, Brooklyn Center will still be receiving slightly less funding from LGA than we received in 2002. In addition, LGA is a much smaller percentage of our budget than it was in 2002, 6.6% in 2019 versus 15% in 2002. These additional resources will help the city provide essential services to our citizens. Among our highest priorities is to complete the reconstruction of our neighborhood infrastructure and to work collaboratively with other governments. Education of the private sector to create opportunities for youth and others in need of the skills and opportunities to move from poverty and underemployment into the mainstream of our society. An increase in LGA funding will make a real difference in our ability to achieve these goals. Madam Chair and members, on behalf of the City of Brooklyn Center, I want to thank Representative Vang for introducing this bill, and I would urge the committee to include the LGA appropriation increase in the division report. Thank you, and I will stand for questions.
Thank you very much, Mayor. Representative Runbeck has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I wonder if, I appreciate the history on this, and I think history is always, we tend to forget it, I think, oftentimes around here. But apparently in 2002, the legislature allowed cities to be exempt from sales tax, and that has been a provision that's gone forward every year. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention. Do you know, Mr. Mayor, how much the city has saved in sales tax over those same years?
Representative Runbeck, I think the chair, I think the year that you have is not correct, but let's check with Pat Dalton.
Okay. Did I have that wrong on the year?
Madam Chair, Representative Runbeck, actually, local governments didn't receive the exemption from sales tax again until 2013.
All right. I stand
Representative Runbeck.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm sure it was appreciated either way. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. See, in the Department of Revenue's analysis, it just says by the analysis details. Now, this isn't the first time I've been on property tax, so this isn't news to me. But it states that it is assumed that with increase of LGA and the CPA, that it would reduce property taxes and the levies would go down in cities. Now, I've been around for a little bit of time on this planet and have seen that come and go, and sometimes it's true and sometimes it's not. I think traditionally it is indicated and seen that oftentimes cities don't necessarily reduce their levies with an increase in LGA. Some do, so I don't paint with a broad brush. So the question is for the mayor, do you intend then to speak with your council, because you have a city council, of course, and is it your intention then, if this does get included in the division report with the omnibus tax bill, that perhaps you could lower your levy and property taxes on some of your residents and businesses?
Mayor Elliott.
Madam Chair, Mr. Representative, it is entirely conceivable that we could lower the levy. And we will certainly speak to that with the council and to see if that's a possibility, certainly.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative McDonald.
Yeah, just to follow up. And only because you're in the hot seat, Mr. Mayor, as a fellow mayor as well, so I, with all respect and admiration as well, I could have asked this to Representative Marcourt because he was in the hot seat earlier. So if indeed you do get that inclusion of $415,000, and it is possibility, what percentage do you think would be an opportunity for a property tax reduction for your citizens, which one is my brother, of course, in your fine city? So just curious as to what
your brother lives in our city? In
yes.
Okay.
Mayor Elliott.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Madam Chair. Mr. Representative, I would have to get back to you on a percentage decrease, potential percentage decrease. But we certainly, don't want to overburden our residents. We understand that this LGA will, contribute greatly to the amount of resources that we have. But I would have to get back to you on a certain percentage. But certainly I am going to go back, and this will be a matter of discussion for our city council, looking at a possible reduction in the levy and looking at a percent.
Excellent.
And then yeah. Representative Petersburg has a question, and then we have to move on because we have a long agenda ahead of us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to get back to Representative Renbeck's concern or question that, indeed, we are a little bit different than we were in 2002, even if we were to go back to this level, because in 2013 we did allow for sales tax exemption, which actually increased the purchasing power of the same dollars in that. So, I mean, I just wanted us to keep in mind that we have done things to help compensate, even though it may not be in direct government aid. The fact that you don't have to pay sales tax from collecting sales tax is also a positive as well. So I just wanted to put that in front of the committee. Thank you.
Thank you. And with that, we'll go to our next testifier, who is Pert Bogani. Oh, I'm told he's a resource to the to us and doesn't need to testify. And Gary Carlson would like to add just a few comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, my name is Gary Carlson. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. I just want to, again, thank Representative Bang for introducing this bill as well. And I might as well, just for the committee's expeditious activity here, just go ahead and thank the other three authors of bills that restore the LGA funding, Representatives Brand, Liz Lagarde, and Hertas. So I will not need to testify on those bills, but they all restore the LGA funding. We don't have specific positions on the formula changes in those other bills, but I'll just go on the record saying that the restoration is something the League supports. With that, Madam Chair, I would stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Representative Duskowski has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Carlson. But, you know, Mr. Carlson, we have looked at these LGA increases in the past, and each of them has really ushered in after them still a property tax increase for Minnesotans in those communities. So I wouldn't expect that would this make this the all-time highest amount of LGA in the history of the state paid out? And then secondly, if this is passed into law, would we see a departure from the past and actually this time maybe see a decrease in property tax levies?
Mr. Carlson.
Madam Chair, Representative Drozdowski, this would equal the highest amount of LGA paid. Actually, in 2003, LGA was supposed to originally receive, I think it was $586 million of an appropriation. However, in the wake of the dot-com bust and the post-9/11 recession, the state made severe cuts in all kinds of programs, LGA, CPA, and we had, I think it was $121 million cut that year. So this isn't the highest appropriated amount, but it would be equal to the highest paid amount of LGA. And then to your other question about would this result in tax or levy reductions, Mr. Chair and members, I think going back to the purpose of LGA, I think Representative Marquardt spelled it out that it's both property tax relief and making sure that citizens across the state have adequate access to public resources and public services. And so each city is going to have to make that decision on their own. The last time we had a fairly significant LGA increase was after the 2013 LGA reforms. We put $80 million into that formula. City levies went up, I think it was by 1.8%. You may say, well, why didn't they go down? Keep in mind that LGA now is less than 20% of a typical city budget. So the fact is that even if LGA goes up by 10% for that city that has a 20% of their budget, 80% of their budget is still funded through property taxes. So it will have a different effect on different cities based upon how much they receive. But I will say that cities will look very hard about their services and their levies and will make decisions accordingly. So I can't guarantee anything, but I know cities will look carefully at their budgets.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson.
Representative Duskowski. I would just like to thank Mr. Carlson, too. And Mr. Carlson, I remember that 2013 LGA increase, too, and I thought it was a 2% increase in property taxes in the metro area and 4% in rural Minnesota. I remember a 2 and a 4. And I remember then, at that point, then past Speaker Thiessen saying that LGA increases don't decrease property taxes, but we are we will be forever hopeful as we go forward here. And I was reminded actually by a testifier prior to you today that the next plea of the cities and the counties is going to, if this passes into law, is going to want to see inflationary adjustments in the next bills that come forward. So, Madam Chair, I think that's what we would expect next. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, Representative Vang. Would you like to renew your motion to lay over House File 1434?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I would like to renew my motion to lay over House File 1434 as amended for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report.
Great. That House File 1434 is laid over. Thank you very much. And next we have House File 1102, Representative Lislegaard. Welcome to the division, Representative Lislegaard, and I would like to make a motion to bring House File 1102 before the committee.
So moved.
Representative McDonald moves House File 1102 be brought before the committee for possible inclusion in the division report. Welcome to the committee, and please tell us about it.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to present House File 1102. A bill that will improve and strengthen the local government aid program. As a greater Minnesota legislator and a former mayor of the city of Aurora, I am keenly aware of the importance local government aid plays in communities across this state. House File 1102 has two key components. First, it restores funding for the program to its 2002 funding of $564.9 million by increasing the current appropriation by $30.5 million. Secondly, it modernizes the formula so that a city's maximum LGA amount continues to reflect the growing financial pressures that cities face across Minnesota. Changes in the formula reduce the number of cities estimated to lose aid from 2019 to 2020, particularly the smaller cities, and will ensure that as the financial pressures cities face continue to grow, so will cities' maximum LGA amount. LGA is a true statewide program, benefiting nearly 90% of cities across Minnesota, and is critical for addressing large inequities in property wealth that exist between communities. City spending is about a quality of life, as cities primarily spend their money on public safety, streets, highways, and economic development, along with housing. LGA helps level the playing field between cities so that every Minnesotan has the opportunity to live in a vibrant community. As I noted earlier, I served as the mayor of a small community in rural Minnesota and as a counselor for that for prior 14 years. Because of that experience, I fully understand the funding from LGA is not a want, but rather a need. And Councillor Brad Hadrava here with me, and I have Bradley Peterson to answer any questions you may have.
Welcome to the committee. First, though, are there any member questions on the bill itself? Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and welcome, Representative Lislegaard. You piqued my curiosity when you said you were mayor of Aurora. Could you tell me how recent that was, what year that was?
Just until I got elected, so last year.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Lislegaard, do you remember in approximately what was your city budget, your general fund spending?
Approximately $3 million. Oh, I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Representative, approximately $3 million.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And seeing no other questions, welcome to the committee, Council Member, and please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Brad Hadrava, and I am a member of the Eveleth City Council. I'd like to thank Representative Lislegaard for sponsoring this bill, 1102, not only for the small cities of Eveleth, but other smaller cities like Eveleth. I've been on the City Council for 9 years, and in this time I've seen where it is so important that LGA is helping us and the services and residents of our businesses and to rely on repairs of our old buildings and our streets. As you can see by the handout in your packet, the chart compares with amount that the city's raise base is 1% increase of their tax rate. The Eveleth is relatively low compared with other communities. In the city of Eveleth, we have a lot of aging communities, a lot of aging city community buildings and infrastructure. We don't have resources and simply to build new buildings, and we work hard to make sure that we are doing what we need to take care of them. An LGA increase would help us continue and maintain our city hall, our fire hall, our library, and our historic hippodrome. That all those buildings can be continued to serve as the citizens in the way that they are meant. Like many cities under 5,000, we struggle to pay for street improvements. But again, that's not the sort of thing we should skimp on, or so our council has taken a depth to finance those projects. A good project portion of the levy increases last year was a debt service, and the street projects and simply cannot be ignored. And I can refer to the first year I started, we were going to do a street called Garfield Street from the top of the hill down. It was $900-some thousand. Last year we had caught up with the other streets, and we were looking at doing that one, and now it's $1.5 million. So it's how important LGA is to in street structure to repair the streets. And then, of course, when it comes to health insurance, our costs likewise continue to go up in recent years. Double-digit percent increases have not been unheard of, and that's something that everybody works on to repair. In conclusion, whether it's public safety, taking care of our public buildings, our streets, our dealings, and our rising cost of health care, we're working hard to make sure that every dollar is well spent. LGA helps us manage the cost and provide those services, infrastructure to our residents and businesses, despite having tax base that is not as strong as other cities. The overall amount of we're asking in the LGA is compared to state total budget is small. We ask for a big impact to the city of Eveleth and other communities like us, because that's what it'll give us. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Hadrava. Any questions? I don't see any. Is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to testify with concerns on House File 1102? If not, Representative, there is an A1 amendment that we probably should put on. Is that correct, Representative Liz Lagarde?
Yes.
Great. Representative McDonald, since you moved the bill, would you move the A1 amendment to get it in the form of the author prefers?
I shall.
Thank you. All in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The amendment is adopted. And with that, seeing nothing else, Representative Liz Lagarde, any summary remarks?
No, just thank you for your time, and we appreciate any support I can get.
Thank you. And with that, House File 1102 is laid over for possible conclusion in the division report.
As amended.
And I am going to move the agenda a little bit to take up House File 807. We have some testifiers who've traveled a long distance. We want to make sure that they have a chance to be heard. I don't think it'd be a problem, but we just want to make sure we get that taken care of. So welcome to the committee, Representative Purcell. And this is House File 807. And who would like to move House File 807 for Representative Purcell?
So moved, Madam.
Representative Marquardt moves that House File 807 be brought before the committee for its consideration and layover for final consideration in our division report. Welcome to the committee, Representative Purcell, and tell us about your proposal.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. House File 807 is a bill that is looking to address some fiscal issues in several counties in Minnesota. And under current law, sales taxes collected from Indian gaming operations are split equally between the state of Minnesota and the sovereign tribes. From the state share, a portion, 10% as it is today is remitted to the counties in which these casinos are located. This proposed legislation would double the county share, increasing it from 10 to 20%, correspondingly reducing the state share. I'm going to cut my remarks a little bit short here, Madam Chair, and I know you've got time issues too, and I would just say for the committee members that the current aid that is provided under this to the counties is roughly $1.5 million, $1.543 million, and so that with a fiscal impact that would be doubled. So that impact to the state would be $1.543 million. So, and I do have some testifiers, Madam Chair.
Great. I have the first commissioner is County Cass County Commissioner Neil Galeswick. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Madam Chair, I appreciate that you pronounce it that way with Mrs. Gash, but yes, Galeswick is correct. Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Purcell, thank you. Madam Chair, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today on this matter of importance not only to Cass County, but also to the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwa. And I'm honored that I will not be the only one testifying on this today, but that Tribal Chair Farron Jackson is going to be following me to the testifying table. Cass County is a 2,000-square-mile county that's located in north-central Minnesota. A significant portion of Cass County lies within the boundaries of the Leech Lake Indian Reservation. A large portion of Cass County is publicly owned, and 15% of Cass County is comprised of lakes and rivers. So, in fact, only about 50% of the property of the county is subject to a property tax levy. Needless to say, this presents us with some unique and challenging issues. We are grateful for the revenue streams that we receive, such as payment in lieu of taxes from both our state and federal property owners. And we are also grateful for the revenue we receive from the local option sales tax, which comes from people who come to spend their money and to recreate on the lakes and public land in our county. As Representative Purcell mentioned, there is an agreement between the state of Minnesota and the Leech Lake Band, and under which the tribe has consented to pay a tax to the state of Minnesota based on the revenue generated by casinos that they operate on tribal land. This money is intended to offset some of the costs that accrue to state and local governments, supporting things such as increased law enforcement, roads, other infrastructure, social services, and other governmental-related activities that arise from the result, the impact of having these casinos. Current law requires that 10% of the state share of this tax be returned to affected counties. The bill before you would increase that amount to 20%. Now, in 2017, Cass County received $223,504 as its share of the state's share of the tribal tax. Had this bill been in effect in 2017, Cass County would have received twice that amount, $447,008. In Cass County, an additional $223,504 will pay for the full cost of operating our clerk of court's office, or an additional $223,504 would replace nearly all of the local levy needed to fund our sheriff's boat and water safety program. Again, an additional $223,504 would, which equals about, well, the $223,000 would fund all but a small portion of our sheriff's emergency service budget. So in other words, this $223,504, which equals approximately 1% of Cass County's local property tax levy, is real money in our rural county. Coincidentally, for those who are interested, the Cass County Board of Commissioners was able to hold our property tax increase to approximately 1% last year, something that both we and our local property taxpayers are quite pleased about. This bill is not at all about taking more money from our friends and neighbors. Instead, this bill is about keeping locally generated money in the neighborhood, working to solve problems within our communities. This bill would make it easier for Cass County and other affected counties to work with our tribal partners on things like our drug court, which puts offenders on a path to health, restoration, and participation, rather than keeping them on the road to incarceration, isolation, and despair. This bill would make it easier for us to provide the services needed as the tribe works to increase housing and employment opportunities on their land. And finally, this bill would make it easier for us to build on the promise that we have made with the tribe to work together to make our communities stronger, healthier, and more economically vibrant. I'm going to leave it to Leech Lake Tribal Chair Farron Jackson to speak a bit more about the strong relationship between his nation and Cass County and the positive effect that that relationship has had in our community. But in closing, I would like to emphasize this. The Leech Lake Tribal Council and the Cass County Board of Commissioners represent the same people. Chair Jackson and I are here today speaking on their behalf, and together we ask you to please pass this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And with that, we'll welcome Tribal Cree Chair Farron Jackson to the committee. Welcome, and thank you for traveling to testify.
Anine Bujou, Madam Chair, just an honor to be here, and thanks for setting some time aside for us today. And what Neil was stating is the tribe, Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe, fully supports 807, you know, with the good partnership that we've developed with Cass County. And like Neil stated, you know, echo some of his words, you know, we deal with the same community members, with our social needs and our natural resources, our timber, and everything that we hold in common on Leech Lake. We always want to be a good neighbor, a good partner, you know. Even in Itasca County, the numbers are still the same. It's 223,000, which would double as well, making, you know, close to $1 million that Leech Lake would, you know, with the state would be, you know, doubling the dollar amount. So we know as the communities grow, so do the needs, and we're just happy to be a part of this team. You know, we have a very strong working relationship with Cass County here now, and we've kind of have a lot of meetings, shouldn't say a lot, some meetings jointly with them, and we have good positive dialogue, and we just want to kind of keep that good working relationship growing.
Thank you. Any questions? Seeing none, is there anyone in the audience who'd like to testify on House File 807? If not, any summary remarks, Representative Purcell?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and just to thank the committee for their consideration on this bill. There are 16 counties that would be impacted across the state of Minnesota, and in a positive way. So appreciate your support for the bill.
Representative Rundrup has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So there's three tribes that are split between two counties. Right, and so you're sharing that with two counties. Is there any need to pro rata that and according to population or area, land area, or is that just too much?
I'm trying to think of the answer, Madam Chair. Trying to think of the answer for that, and I'm hard pressed to give you an answer that is educated. So I'm looking if research would have a an answer for that. I mean, it's based, Madam Chair, it's based on the revenues that are produced within the county from the casinos. So that's the premise.
I think that's the question that we can follow up on and get information mm-hmm. to the members on. We'll share that, of course, with Representative Purcell as we pursue that further. With that, Representative Marquardt renews his motion that House File 807 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Division Report. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
And next we'll go back to House File 1101, Representative Brand. And while he's coming up, can I have a motion to bring that before the committee?
So moved.
Representative Runbeck moves that House File 1101 be brought for the committee for consideration and inclusion. And Representative Runbeck, would you also move the A1 amendment? It's another
technical amendment. I'll move the A1 amendment.
Thank you. All in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The A1 amendment is adopted. Welcome to the committee. Representative Brand, please tell us about this proposal.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm here to talk today about House File 1101. Which is an LGA bill. It does three things. It restores the local government aid back to what it was in 2002. It modernizes the formula. And then the third thing it does is it includes an inflator adjustment, which is similar to what the Minnesota legislature had in the local government aid program from 1994 to 2002. And so from there, I just wanted to mention real quickly that I'm a former St. Peter City Council member. And for 7 years, I've had the pleasure of putting together budgets in the state of in the city of St. Peter. And I think the biggest thing that I can say is that we've had frustrations over the years locally when it comes to local government aid. Of course, you know, any increase is an increase that benefits, and it is an improvement. Last year, we saw a 1% increase in the local government aid for St. Peter, which equated to about $4,000, which we were able to use to buy a tire balancer for our public works department to help balance tires for our fleet of vehicles. And so, though it's much appreciated, at the same time, it really doesn't get at the heart of what needs are in greater Minnesota. And so what I'm asking today is for the restoration of that back to that 2002 level. And then again, the inflator, we can have a conversation about that as well. And I'll turn it over to Bradley Peterson with the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, and he can testify about this bill as well.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Again, my name is Bradley Peterson with the firm of Flaherty & Hood, here today on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. I want to start by thanking Representative Brand, Representative Liz Lagarde, and all of the legislators who have brought forth LGA bills today to increase the appropriation. I think seeing the enthusiasm for these programs and the support that they have throughout the state is encouraging. I want to focus my comments on the appropriation adjustment based on inflation and population growth. Just as state government, as with state government, costs for local governments continue to rise. Since 2002, the measure of state and local government inflation, the implicit price deflator, or IPD, has increased nearly 62%, just over 3% annually. Nationally, as you heard Mr. Hadrava discuss, health insurance costs continue to go up, and for the city of Eveleth, they were recent years often in double digits. Since 2002 nationally, for local governments, it's been about 7.45%. Since 2002, the number of Minnesotans living in a city has increased by 14.43%. That's a 583,000 more people that city governments had to provide services and infrastructure for. In the meantime, the LGA program has not kept pace. As we know, the LGA appropriation is still $30.5 million short of its 2002 level. And while the overall state general fund budget has grown by 65% since 2002, the LGA program has decreased by 5%. Put another way, because of the erosion of the program through inflation and its underfunding, the purchasing power of the LGA program today has dropped to 55% of what it would have been in 2002. Adding an appropriation adjustment for LGA is not a new concept, as Representative Brand mentioned. In fact, in the late 90s, there was an appropriation adjustment based on inflation included in the program, similar to the one that is in this proposal. In summary, the benefit of having an appropriation adjustment is that it creates more stability for local governments as they plan their budgets, allows the program to keep pace with the cost increases local governments face, and does so without having to have the yearly discussion here at the legislature of what should or should not be the right amount of LGA funding for cities. With that, members, I would like to thank you for your time. Again, thank all the members who have brought forward LGA ideas today to enhance the program. And especially Representatives Brand and Liz Lagarde for their support of our two CGMC bills. Thank you.
Representative Runbeck has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I see the inflator is in this bill, and you know, my concern is not that we don't have the discussion every year at the state, but that there's no need for a discussion at the local level about what's happening with needs and population increase or decrease, that kind of thing. So that's my point. But I wanted to, Madam Chair, if Representative Brand, what's been the population increase, for example, in St. Peter over the last 15
Brand.
Years?
Over the last, I can say, last 10 years, it's increased by 10%.
Okay. Thank you very much. I mean, so, Madam Chair and Representative, I mean, the point is that cities that are growing have their own sort of base of growth and market, you know, market value, et cetera. Seems like some of that we ought to be able to say is where the growth is coming from and where the dollars come from.
Representative Brand.
Madam Chair, Representative Brundack, what I would also point out is the fact that there is a college, Gustavus Adolphus College, that's the taxable entity within the city confines. Also, we've got county, school, city buildings, plus the regional treatment center. And so we've got a large portion of non-taxable land within the confines of St. Peter. And so although we are growing slowly. We are also luckily gaining in terms of new younger couples that are having families. And so they're buying existing homes, they're moving in, and they're having a few kids. And so that's where we're really getting our population growth.
Thank you.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Peterson, it sounds like we're getting kind of caught in a little bit of a catch-22 here. I remember when we were discussing the sales tax on auto sales going into transportation. The concern always was, well, it'll take away from K-12 education and other things because we're pulling dollars out of the general fund. With the inflator, it seems like that's kind of the same thing. If we were to have a downturn in the economy, in which we may see, as we did 5-6 years ago with a $6 billion deficit, with the inflator in there, aren't we still caught in the same thing where now the dollars are going to LG and we're going to again short the K-12 education program? I mean, I think the inflator is one of those dangerous things. When we have the inflator as an expense, then we kind of curtail ourselves from being able to deal with deficit budget situations. So what is your thoughts on that?
Mr. Peterson.
Madam Chair, Representative Petersburg, I've got two thoughts on that. The first being the discussion that we had last year related to constitutionally dedicating the sales tax on auto parts to transportation purposes. The difference there is by constitutionally locking those funds away, the legislature would not have the ability to adjust on the fly and make changes in the funding mix for state government priorities. So that's, I think, one difference is that the discussion we were having last year is that those funds would have been put in a constitutional lockbox. The other point being is I think what happened with the last time the inflator was in law plays out exactly, I think, to this scenario. We had the inflator in law in the early or in the late to mid to late 90s. We got to the early 2000s where we had the dot-com bust and state budget problems, and then the legislature at that time made the choice to take the inflator away. And so, you know, I think it would be reasonable to expect that if the state finds itself in that position again, that that would be one of the policy choices that the state could make if we had such an inflator again on the LGA appropriation.
Just brief.
Representative Peters.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so it sounds like you would be understanding if this LGA inflator had to be gone away later as well. And so this isn't something that you're want to put in concrete into stone, but actually allow it as a flexible tool. So thank you for that.
Thank you. And seeing Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Peterson, so if, and I guess I should have looked at this bill. I underestimated you. It's already in the bill, the inflator. So if cities are going to be in a position of looking forward to an additional 2.5 or 5% per year automatically in additional tax money coming in from another source that they don't have to be accountable for, how will that make them more judicious in their spending?
Well, I think, Mr. Chair, you know, they are, I think, because they know that you're watching, they are very mindful of every dollar that they spend, whether it's based on the local property taxes or what comes through the state in terms of local government aid. And so I think just as if you know, we were to come back every year and you were to grant a $11 to $12, $15 million increase each time, which is about what the inflation probably would be, they're going to be good stewards of that money. And, you know, I think that there are a lot of needs throughout the state. If you look at the total amount of money that the LGA formula, if you were to fully fund it, says the needs are represented in that formula, it's over $800 million. And so at, you know, 534 where we are now, or 565 where we hope to be, we're still well below what the formula would suggest full funding would be.
So, Madam Chair and Mr. Peterson, at what point do you and the other organizations that keep coming here demanding more money from the citizens for LGA and CPA, at what point do you stop coming to ask, or does that ever not ever happen?
Well, Mr. Chair, I would, or Madam Chair, Representative Drazkowski, Mr. Chair, you know, first I would say let's get back to the 2002 level, which was, you know, a decade and a half ago, uninflation adjusted, and then let's work towards getting towards full funding of the formula, and then we should do an assessment of whether that meets the needs that are out there.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Peterson, I can have this debate offline.
I think that's a good idea because of the hour of our needing to wrap up has arisen. And with that, Representative Runbeck renews her motion that House File 1101 be laid over, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. And thank you very much. Members, we have gotten the answer to the question on House File 807 dealing with casino payments. House research says that payments are split equally amongst the counties where casinos are located, and the population is not a factor. It's just divided equally when there's multiple counties. And as you can tell, we have a very ambitious agenda for Wednesday evening, so please come on time, and we'll continue to hear from our local elected officials about bills that impact them. And with that, the Property Tax Division is adjourned.